You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name's Pat DeVilla. With me is my co-host.
How's it going? Ferrari. How's it going, Pat?
Excellent. How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
You know, we missed the 2 week mark again.
Yeah, we both forgot, right?
Totally forgot it was 2 weeks, man.
Too much going on.
We're busy with work and you know, the kids and just stuff.
Everything happening in my house is breaking down.
You've had a bad month.
It has been. The air conditioner, the oven, the dryer, my wife's car now. Her air conditioner busted up in her car, so my one daughter knocked her head off the coffee table. So I mean, like, it's just everything. Whether it's the kids, the house, the car, you know, something's breaking. So
did you have to get a new air conditioning system?
We had to put a new the condenser basically blew it. It shorted at the condenser itself. It actually fried up the line to where it actually attached to the house, but luckily never actually got back to my breaker box.
So you had electrical damage?
It was electrical damage on the wire. They had to replace that whole extension from the house to the condenser itself.
Oh, man.
The motor went. So I mean, they had it working for a while,
so how
but
much
it was
rattling.
Honestly, because my dad's kind of hooked up with he knows like all the contractors and stuff like that. I'm only paying for parts. My cousin does the HVAC, so he came and just fixed all the stuff.
So what are you, a couple $100?
Not even. It's like $150 bucks.
Out.
Yeah, like $150. But then you add on top of that the $150 for the oven. The oven part of it went. The oven part of it went. The broiler worked, the burners worked, everything else worked, but still, you couldn't turn it on, just wouldn't heat it. Then my wife walks out the other day, and the car is full of water on the back, in the rear passenger seat.
Oh my, you got a leak?
Well, no, it's not a leak. I think there's like a port that directs like, you know, it allows the condensation to run out of the car, so when you stop, you see the puddle of water
after
the air is on.
Something?
It's clogged, it's still clogged, I haven't gotten it in yet, so... Just too many problems, you know.
I feel for you, man. I just had $300 worth of work on my car.
Oh, yeah.
I had my engine flushed, and then my windshield had a nasty crack that I had on for a while. And it wasn't enough that, you know, the insurance would cover it.
Right,
so
right.
Basically paid, you know, $200 out of my pocket.
Yeah.
That hurts. When it's like little things like that, one after the other, man, it just accumulates into
right.
It just kills you.
Yep.
But besides that, you know, there's been some really awesome news.
Yes.
We heard through the grapevine that Myth TV 022 will be released, hopefully, by the end of September.
Yes, we're looking forward to that.
They're talking the last week of September. And if all goes well, you know, they'll release it. They're in a feature freeze for the last couple of weeks. Right now, what they're doing is just quashing bugs. If you go to the Myth TV site and you go into the SVN, they have a bug tracker, and you list it by the release number. You can go in there, and the last time I checked, I think it was yesterday or today, I forget when it was, it was like around 100. Mm-hmm. And out of those 100, I think they killed about 35, 40.
Right.
So that they're making progress. If they can get that number down, you know, no critical bugs and just have like, you know, nuisance, you know, within a reasonable number, like 10, 20, you know, just very minor bugs.
And right.
They'll release it. You know, even if it's pushed back a week or two, it's mm-hmm. pretty good. It's been, how long has it been since 21 came out?
Was it March? March of last year?
No, it was the year before that. It was 2007.
Yeah.
Was it 2007?
I thought it was 2008. No?
Maybe 2008. You're right. It was 2008.
February or March it was.
Yeah. So we're going on a year and a half mm-hmm. almost. So that's about right, 18 months.
There's a lot of good stuff coming.
It's massively good mm-hmm. stuff coming down. If we got the release notes page here on the Myth TV wiki, and we're looking at some of the features that they're going to have on it. The big thing is that the whole interface is going to be based on Qt4 series widget toolkit, and that's huge because Qt4 is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very modern system. I've programmed with Qt stuff, PyQt, and a little bit of Qt with C++, and it's pretty outstanding what it's capable
of.
The widgets are really nice looking. you know, and to go hand in hand with that, they've redesigned the whole user interface of it so that it's more componentized and more plug-in art type architecture.
Right. That's going to be, it means it's going to be easier for theme developers to come along and utilize that framework to put a nice interface on there.
So you installed the beta in the virtual machine, right?
Yes.
Or the alpha rather.
It's an alpha right now. Probably it'll probably go to beta probably in the, following the same schedule as the Mythbuntu or as the Ubuntu release for Karmic comes up. So
there's a whole new default theming set. And it seems to be really nice, right?
It's real nice. It's called Terra. There's actually some screenshots out there on off of this page if you go to look at the Myth UI piece of it. But it has, you know, they've kind of changed around. You know, typically everything goes top to bottom. You know, when you're interacting with the menus, now everything's kind of right to left. I'm sorry, left to right. You can scroll back and forth between from side to side to go through all the categories. They've kind of reorganized some of the categories. Now, I don't know if this is Mythbuntu doing this, reorganizing some of the menuing layout or not, or if this is just the stock theme, you know, that comes with it. But it is once you actually get it up there, you'll notice some things. It's real nice, real crisp, real clean looking. A lot of things that jump out are like things like anytime it pops up with something as notifications, or say you want to exit out of it completely. Nice little side panel sweeps in, you know, and gives you the options, you know, the different options that you have there, you know. Exit out of it, that type of stuff. I think the same is with if you're in the music player and you back out of the music player back into the menus, you kind of get the same kind of thing. Do you want to continue?
Is that a compositing effect?
It's kind of hard to tell. I don't. There's not really any compositing turned on inside the virtual machine, but I'm guessing no. If I don't have it on there, it's probably not. But I imagine once I get it onto an environment that's got a true NVIDIA card or something like that can support all of that stuff, where it would probably see something a little better.
Qt 4 supposedly has been set up so that it's got a smaller footprint and it's able to do more, and it's supposedly very modern, robust.
Right.
So, I mean, what the other really big, huge news of what it's doing is it's supporting a whole slew of new devices, capture devices and whatnot.
Right.
And the real, real big one that everybody is waiting for is the Hophog PVR 1212.
Exactly. I've been looking prices up on it lately.
Yeah, there's been sales. There's been sporadic sales. In fact, whenever there's a sale for that box, yeah, usually the last few ones, it's been Dell.
Yeah.
And they'll have a coupon code. And,
oh, yeah.
You can get it for about $150.
I didn't even think to check on a site like Dell. I'll have to do that.
You need to get the coupon code. Just look at our forum and you'll see if one of really good sites that I'm subscribed to via RSS feeds is the Geektonic website, which is a home theater PC kind of thing, general type stuff. I subscribe to that and he has a hot deal section. And if there's sales with coupons related to home theater devices, like capture devices, whatnot, hard drives, that kind of thing, he'll post coupon codes in there.
Okay.
And if I see them, I'll repost them in our forum so that everybody can see it. And the past couple of months, I've posted for that box whenever there's been a sale.
Right.
So now's the time to get it. You know, the next time a sale comes up, definitely buy it.
Right. I'm on top of it. I'm all over it. I am.
Yeah.
I'm just itching to get it. So.
Because the PVR 1212, what's different about that kind of a box than some standard PCI cards is that... most of the PCI cards, you need a coax connection in, okay? And these PCI cards, the CAM ATSC type cards, is that's either, open unencrypted cable channels or over-the-air ATSC.
Right.
And this device is different in that it does the video capture via the component connections.
Right.
And basically, component, when you talk about component connections, it's technically an analog connection, but it's outputting high definition quality. And looking at an HDMI out feed via a component feed versus a component feed, I can't tell much of a difference.
Right. I think you're going to have that really acute eye to really see the difference. But I think you and me, I mean, we're just going to look at it and we're going to see a high definition quality picture.
It's a very good quality picture. I don't see much of a difference. Now, by doing that, they're using the so-called analog hole. Because it's considered an analog. Now, I have the box, and I've done some testing with it, and it can also capture 5.1
surround
sound.
That's nice.
Or you could just do standard, stereo if you want. Recommended is you upgrade the firmware. To do that, you're going to need a a Windows box or Windows running in a virtual machine. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the Hoppog firmware updater app is Windows only.
Right.
So that's that. So that's a good idea to keep the firmware updated on that. What's really nice, because it's using the component connections, is that you can hook this up to either to a cable box, a satellite box. Mm-hmm. You can even hook it up to a Blu-ray or an HD DVD player.
Sure, yeah.
And do captures that way.
Right.
You know, if you don't want to do like a direct digital rip, you just want to archive stuff. That's probably.
Does that have one set of inputs on that or two?
It's got one set of inputs. It's got an in and an out. It's like a pass through.
Oh, okay.
So what it is, as long as the box is plugged in,
mm-hmm.
you'll be able to watch your cable box. You won't need to have the device running.
Right.
So that's what that is, and you can have multiple boxes. Basically, the way it connects to the computer, you know, MythBox or whatever system you're using, it's via USB.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have, as long as you have multiple USB connections, you could have these multiple boxes.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll need obviously a separate cable box or satellite box for each box that you're doing recording off of. So that's going to be my main recording place.
Right.
And once that happens, I'm going to move my box down here, I think, and move the little Zotac box upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be that. Now, some of the other things that are, what goes hand in hand with the HD PVR 1212 is going to be VDPAU, which is for the newer NVIDIA graphics cards.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that in the past. What that is that's offloading playback of certain codecs, in particular H.264, which the PVR 1212 records to.
Right.
The old PVR, standard def cards, the mm-hmm. old Hoppog cards, like the 150 to 250 and 350.
Yeah.
They have onboard encoders that do the MPEG-2, standard def MPEG-2. Mm-hmm. What's different about the PVR 1212, it's got an encoder that's doing it via H.264.
Right.
And the thing about H.264 is you get very high-quality recordings. The files tend to be smaller than regular MPEG-2s, but the playback is more CPU-intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So what NVIDIA has done is they have VDPAU, which is video rendering and decoder. That what it does is once you play back the files, all the decoding on playback is done on the graphics processing chip. And what that means is you'll have very low CPU utilization
in
playback. Whereas if I would play back a high-def MPEG-2 file without VDPAU, my dual-core AMD 64X2 box would be pegged, the CPUs would be pegged around, 65-70%.
Right.
Okay, when I do it with PDPAU, that goes down to about 5%.
Yeah, 4%. Not even. That last time we checked, it was what, 2? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. The H.264, forget it.
Yeah.
It's even higher. If you just do CPU only playback, you're just playing it back with, all the offload of the graphics is done by your computer CPU, it's going to be even higher. And with my box, I was barely able to do the lowest quality recordings.
Right.
But with the VDPAU, I get the highest qualities playback, highest bit rate.
It looks really, really nice.
So, that's going to be the default capture device. Everybody's going to be using it, including satellite TV subscribers.
Right.
Because a satellite TV, you need a box
to
be able to watch content. And there was a story, just to get off on a sidetrack here, there was a story, if you read on the MythTV user mailing list, and I've seen it a couple other places, so supposedly the cable company has been dealing with the government, and basically what they're trying to do is to get rid of all open cam digital stations.
Yeah.
And supposedly what the pushback it's going to be is that they're only going to leave network TV stations open. And that's what's happening right now for our provider, our CNN.
Right, yeah, that's all I have is the network ones.
We went from like 30 high-def open channels to 6 overnight.
Yeah, 6.
And it's basically the main networks.
And CBS, they blamed it on what, the digital transition
CBS,
or something like that?
CBS, NBC, ABC, CW, PBS.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the excuse was the digital transition.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow the argument was that by closing them, they're going to be able to provide more space
blah,
which is a complete load of shit.
Yeah, right.
A channel takes up so much bandwidth, whether or not it's encrypted or not.
Right.
It's the same bandwidth it's going to use up. But the encrypted channel is actually going to use probably a little more because you got to deal with the encryption.
Exactly, yeah. The box then has to handle all of that.
You know, what else? The real the other thing that's huge is FFmpeg is going to be vastly updated.
That'll be great.
Now, for people who don't know, FFmpeg is the libraries that Myth uses majority-wise for the playback and the coding and whatnot.
Right.
Other programs and applications use FFmpeg extensively.
Mm-hmm.
MPlayer, VLC, the list goes on and on. Even some of the close proprietary systems use FFmpeg.
Right.
I know Apple.
It's just like the Swiss Army knife of all video processing.
It's phenomenal.
Right? Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
It can pretty much read anything and write anything out.
I'm looking at the bullet list here on the wiki. It says a VDPAU rendering decoder for hardware accelerated playback of H.264, MPEG 1 and 2, Windows Media, and VC1. Now, VC1, if you get like the high def DVDs, Blu-ray, or the HDVD DVDs, usually the videos are encoded using either VC1 or H.264. So that's what it is. Some of them are VC1. Some of them are H.264. I think VC1 was developed by Microsoft, if I'm not mistaken. What else? HD Home Run, which is a very popular recording capture box, which is a network-capable box that you plug into your network and you just hook up. It's got dual tuner captures so that you're able to do simultaneous recording. Apparently, I don't have the box, but apparently with the current version of Myth that you're only able to use one tuner at a time. So they have a fix in there to be able to do both tuners at the same time.
I think that's also true for some cards. I think like my PC HDTV 5500 card, I can only use there's a regular analog.
It's one of the
capture.
Other.
There's regular analog on there. Then there's the open cam high def. There's an NTSC and an ATSC one. And I believe that even though they both exist on there at the same time, I can only use one of them. Now there are some new hotbox cards coming out that do provide the two, you know, ATSC connections.
The 2250 card.
Yeah, the 2250. But I don't think that there's support for it yet. There's a driver for it out there, but it's not available.
Right. We talked a little bit about the last episode.
Yeah.
And that was right. It was Stephen Toth is the guy who's doing it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and he has the working driver. You just have to compile it yourself.
Right.
But it is working. One thing, if you look at this bullet item, now Linhas has had this for the last release, the beta of Linhas R6, a pop-up dialog accessible from the main menu using the menu key, which allows the system to be shut down or rebooted.
That is great. That's something that's been missing, at least in Mythbuntu, for quite some time, and should have been
really
in there.
Needed a long time. So it looks like that's going to be a default Myth feature.
That's great. That's great.
That's going to be key for like the little boxes, like a front-end type system.
Right.
If you're like lying in bed watching a show and you just want to shut it down.
Exactly.
Point it, hit it, and go to sleep. You don't have to open up a terminal and, you know, do sudo halt or shut down dash H now.
Have like my Nokia N800 with me and SSH into it, right?
Yeah, I've done that too. That's what I missed about Linhas. The Linhas is great. You would just hit menu, enter.
Right.
It's off.
Off.
What else?
Now, what's with this one here with allowing for upload? So is it going to have some type of an FTP server built in now that I would be able to upload new content to it as well?
That's a good question. That is a good question.
Because I may be sitting there, say, ripping a DVD archiving a DVD on my desktop, and then just want to put a copy of it out there on the Mythbox.
Supposedly, the Universal Plug and Play server has been fixed. I know.
I hope so, because
it's been busted for a while, which is kind of a shame because, you know, if you had like a popcorn hour or something, you would plug it in up to your network, and if the Mythbox was up, you'd see the Mythbox showing up. You'd go in there and you'd see the recordings, you know, listed out.
It worked,
but you went to hit play, and it wouldn't play. Nothing.
The audio and photos worked for me on my N800, my Nokia N800, but the video wouldn't play. It just didn't understand what codec that was. So I assume I could have found one out there for it. I just didn't really look into it.
They've supposedly did a big major overhaul of the FireWire stuff. They've added support for a whole bunch of new set-top boxes.
And that's pretty big, too, because with the last release, they also kind of rewrote that whole framework as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to have to do a whole lot more with the FireWire connection, and now I don't have to do any of that. So I can't imagine what else they're doing to it, because, quite honestly, that has worked rock solid for me since I've had, you know, that release, you know, on my box.
Another big thing is that if you set up cam cards, scanning and tweaking it and setting them up is very, very laborious and tedious.
Yeah.
Supposedly they've done some upgrades on that so that process is a little easier. I don't have specifics for that, but it is listed. This release notes has been updated as we get closer to the actual release date. There seems to be people going in there and updating it with features and putting in references to trouble tickets and the bugs in the bug tracker. Supposedly they fixed back a whole bunch of DVD playback issues that some people were having.
Mm-hmm.
And some people would burn a disc and then they pop the disc and thing wouldn't play through the MythBox. I haven't had that experience, but I some people have. Supposedly they've added some new deinterlacers. Deinterlacing is the way it handles the frames when you mm-hmm. do the playback. And it just smooths out the playback a little bit. You won't see as much pixelization or jagged edges mm-hmm. during like motion and stuff.
I imagine that's because of things like VDPAU and whatnot coming down the line. So to help out with a lot of that.
Yeah, add support for VDPAU, skip corona, deinterlace, noise reduction, and sharpen blur. Mm-hmm. Again, that's just playback, cleaning it up so that's a little nicer and smoother.
Now on your Ion box, your Zotac box, the way that you set up VDPAU, I think we should probably just hit on that, is that you have to then go in and either create a new recording profile for VDPAU
or a
playback profile
yes.
for it. So you create a new playback profile for it, and then you then set that box to then you always use that, basically, because you want to pretty much offload everything to there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. You have a playback, and I'm not sure whether 22 is going to have a playback profile by default. I imagine they would have some kind of a default
set. Yeah, if they're supporting it, they got to have something in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all I have it set in there is by default use VDPAU.
Right.
You would think that if they would have the setup so that if you selected the VDPAU device mm. that it would
automatically
create a playback profile for mm. it.
I wonder if they don't automatically do that, because you could have the different like, I don't know, with some of the other, with the DVB cards, you could either go with the DVB driver route or you could go the VLC driver route. So there may be other options in there. I don't know if some of that stuff is all cleaned up or not, but when adding some of these cards, you could go with one option or the other. All through the whole list, too, you'll see such and such of a plugin was updated to MythUI. So you'll see, like, the Myth Archive, plugin was updated to MythUI. You'll see all the different interfaces that have been updated with that.
Looks like they're adding support for other compilers. They're going to allow slave backends to be shut down, awakened on demand by the master backend. So
that'd be nice.
Yeah. So if you have a secondary backend, mm-hmm. you can have it controlled by the master backend. What else? I think they're putting some of those database utilities in there by default.
Yes, they are. That script that I talked about that's on the forums out there now, that's going to be the default mechanism in there for backing up and restoring your database. And it's nice because it works. It can be told to work for different versions of the database. So if you are, say, upgrading from, say, a 0.19 database to a 0.22 database, it should be able to handle that. I think at this point.
Myth Phone, which is a VoIP client, if you've connected to like an Astros box or something, that apparently has been pulled.
Yeah, I think no one seems to be using that.
No. I don't know who uses the Myth box to talk.
Yeah, no.
Via VoIP. What else? Myth Music. Now, Myth Music, I have to say, the basic functionality of it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have issues with the way the playback lists are generated, the way you go in there and create a playlist.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very intuitive.
No, but actually, I recently found this out. I was not aware that this functionality existed.
Gotta read the documentation.
Yeah, I know you, but I don't even recall. Even when I did read the documentation, I don't recall seeing this particular key combination to get this menu to pop up that would allow me to generate things based upon like my genres and like the decade that the music existed in. Now that's also assuming that all the ID3 tags and whatnot are all up to date.
Yeah.
So that stuff works. It works really, really nice, but if you don't have all of your ID3 tags up to date, it's really not going to help you out much. And I'm not sure if there's anything out there I'm assuming there is, that'll go out and kind of pull in all that information and update it for me, that it isn't something like your iTunes or, whatever. I'd have to pull the library into another application first, update all of that, and then dump it back out there.
Well, one issue that I've seen with the current versions of Myth and the old versions of Myth is that if you have your music on an NFS share,
mm-hmm.
When you go in and do the playbacks, you'll see the full directory tree structure in the file name, and you got to go in there manually edit.
Yeah,
very, very annoying.
Yeah,
it's an NFS issue, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't think I think mine right now is shared over Samba, and
You don't have that issue. You don't have that issue. Mm. It's very strange.
Yeah.
But I like NFS. NFS is really simple. You go and you put an entry in your etcf stab file, which is where you have your your dish mounts and all that.
Right.
I go in there and you could set up an NFS mount and it's automatically mounted.
That's how I do the Samba one though too.
Yeah.
I just set it up as a. It's not an SMBFS anymore. It's CIFS. It's a different. So it basically is the same syntax that you use as you would for the NFS, except you change NFS for SIFS and tell
it's the same exact thing.
Tell it the directory that you want to mount it to and pretty much does the same thing.
Basically, what you need to do is you need to create a directory in your local folder, and then you go into the etcf stab and you link the network share and map it to the local share.
Now one difference is that with Samba I have to maintain like a separate user ID and password in a file, whereas if it's NFS with Samba, you need to have an account on that box.
Yeah,
to be able to have permission to access that directory on that box.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as performance-wise, I think some people say that NFS is a little better.
It's a gigabit switch in between the two of them.
Are you watching HD video over?
I have some DVDs that are ripped over to there that are, you know, some are full ISOs and some are, you know,
those are standard AVI. Right?
What's that?
Are they standard def?
Yeah, for the most part, they're standard def.
I think this is more...
I don't have an HD player to play them off of anyway. So.
You don't have any BitTorrent files in high def?
No. I don't. Anything I have has just been ripped. Yeah.
There's a few in there.
I should pull some down, see how it works. You know, just to,
yeah. See how it works, which is better. So I've read people saying that the NFS seemed to be a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But try it at it. So if you have playback issues with high def video over a Samba share and it's lagging and stuff, give NFS a shot and see how that works out.
All right, yeah. I'm actually trying to set that up now just to get it out the export. I think that'll work a little better for my wife's netbook. So,
Myth Video's got a whole bunch of new stuff in there. Supposedly, in Myth Video, which is, you know, you point it to a directory either on a local machine or on a network share, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as like the music. You can have NFS or Samba share. You have all your videos in there, and basically, what it is it there's a script in there where it'll go out. You pop in the what's that number called? The IMDb. IMDb number. You pop in the number. It'll go out. It'll pull poster art.
Right.
It'll pull down information about the film, the director who's in it, and it'll make a database entry for you.
Right.
So that when you go into your Myth Video, you'll see, you know, a pretty graphic
with
the information and whatnot. Supposedly the script that does that to Grabber has been improved quite a bit.
Yeah, I had some issues with the ones that are out there now. It's not finding things, and it's weird. Certain DVDs, they don't name things right, so I'm hoping that it kind of takes some of that stuff into account.
Bunch of changes for MythWeb. Well, it's been improved. One of the really big changes that I saw was the web browser.
Yeah.
Previously, Flash wasn't supported. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the new version, it supports Flash. And what this means is you'll be able to go in through the browser and go to like Hulu and whatnot, or whatever website you want to go, like Amazon or whatever,
right,
and watch videos directly through the
That'd be great
with the remote, and that's a big deal.
Because right now we know about that hack that you actually wrote all that up about being able to launch Firefox and has the different aggregator sites open in the different tabs. That'd be nice that'll all be nice and integrated.
Yeah. Actually, in conjunction with that, you're familiar with Miro, right?
Mm-hmm.
Miro is an application where you can subscribe to either audio or video podcasts.
Right. Even BitTorrent as well.
Aggregation.
Yep.
Apparently, they have a plugin in place that will say you have some subscriptors. I can't speak. I got marbles in my mouth today. Apparently, if you have some video subscriptions in Miro, and say like, I don't know, Tiki Bar or whatever, you know, Dr. Evil, whatever, and you have those being pulled in through Miro, the plugin for Myth will take those video cast entries and we'll put the new shows as part of your recordings entries.
Oh, that is awesome.
So you got your TV recordings in the menu. You'll scroll down and you'll see your video cast menus.
Oh, that is
entries
great.
In there in the menu.
That is
and
great.
And then after you watch it, supposedly it'll automatically move it to your Myth Video.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that is pretty cool.
Like archived.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's.
Does it do the same thing with podcasts too? I don't typically listen to podcasts on my MythBox,
no,
but
neither do I.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people use Mirror for podcast aggregation. That's one of the more popular ones. So I assume that'll support it if you want to do that. Another cool thing that some programmer types might want to be interested in is that Python bindings have been added. Additional functions for accessing Myth protocols have been added in, so you can do Python scripting to do specific things that might be interesting coming down the road for your programmer types. And there's been a whole bunch of utility updates done, too. The archiving job, a renamed script. Looks like they're Perl scripts. I'm not a Perl guy myself. You do any
No, I don't do anything with Perl.
Perl's hard, man. Mm-hmm. The syntax, for me, it's brutal, the syntax.
Yeah.
You know, but I've seen some newer Perl programs, some for more recent versions, mm-hmm. and it seems like they're going more in an object-oriented way.
Oh, really?
Python's going. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit easier, but I'm talking about like those old hardcore Perl CGI scripts, man,
on
the web server. Those can be pretty brutal where they're like parsing out like strings of text.
Right, yeah. It does it very fast, though. I will say that.
Perl's phenomenal. I have a lot of respect for Perl developers, man, but I don't think I could do
that.
It gives me a headache.
Yeah.
Perl gives me a headache like Assembler gives me a headache. Have you seen Assembler code?
I did some Assembler and doing my master's, it was pretty brutal, you know, not coming from that background.
Yeah, you're not from that world, man, it's there's not a lot of people that know Assembler and know how to program it well.
Mm-mm.
It's a dying art.
Yeah.
And now there's
I'll stick with Java and PHP and, you know.
Yeah. A whole bunch of the other scripts have been modified. So it just sounds like this is going to be a really nice rev. You know, the really big things are the user interface changes, the support for the new devices, just improving everything.
Right.
More of a focus on the digital capture side of the equation now that here in the States we've gone to
all
the
digital. Yeah.
So the analog stuff is kind of dying on the vine.
Yeah.
A lot of people saying that in their areas are still getting analog feeds, including
You're
still getting an analog feed. No, I've heard stories, people saying that, you know, part of that story that I was talking about where they want to encrypt everything. Supposedly one of the things that the reasons why they're doing that, besides more tighter control, is that they're going to charge people box rentals, even if they have basic.
Yeah.
Anything above the network stations, they're going to have to get a box.
Right. Well, the over-the-air stuff, should still be there, though.
Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see.
I guess that's typically, you know, in the analog realm, right? So.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the new TVs, they do have cam tuners in them. So if you're getting those five channels, conceivably you could plug that directly into your high-def TV and you get those five, six, whatever channels, whatever your cable provider leaves open.
Right.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I was thinking about doing... my cam card, I think, is kind of flaking out on me a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The
Avermedia?
Avermedia, yeah.
I've had that for a long time now. And it seems when I do certain recordings, I'll get like pixelization and audio distortions on it. I thought maybe it was an issue related to VDPAU, but I don't think so.
Are you sure it's not just the signal coming in from RCN? Because I get that on my, you know, watching the TV right through the RCN box that's not hooked up to my
MIDI
box.
This is bad. When we finish recording, I'll show you some examples of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
There's pixelization, and it's not VDPAU related. Mm-hmm. Like, I would try to watch those same shows on the Popcorn Hour.
Yeah.
The Popcorn Hour has a Sigma chip in there, and that thing can handle anything.
Right.
It was the same visual artifacts, audio distortion, same kind of deal.
Hmm.
So I'm thinking it might be the card that's flaking out. So I was thinking about maybe getting an HD Home Run.
Yeah.
Now, HD Home Run is, you know, it's a standalone box that's got a network connection. So basically you would have an antenna coming in for over-the-air stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got two coaxial connections for the two different tuners, or you can put a splitter into your cable connection and do that. So what I was thinking was hooking it up in there.
Yeah.
Next to my switch. Have it over the network because it's all, you know, my setup's wired. And add it.
Is that right where your cable connection comes into, right back there?
Well, the line's coming through there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's perfect then.
Yeah.
That's what it's out of the way. I mean, you know.
I was even considering maybe trying over the air.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't done digital over the air
in
this area.
And I haven't either. There's some sites you can go to, put in your zip code and see what's available.
That. And the only ones that I saw listed for around here was a couple of PBS stations, WFMZ, which is a local station, mm-hmm. and none of the major networks.
Yeah.
Are transmitting close.
I think out in Allentown, I could get a couple more, like your ABC, your CBS. Yeah, you know.
I think that stuff's coming in from either Philly or New York. Mm-hmm. You know, Philadelphia is what, like 60 miles away?
Yeah, if that. 48, I think it is.
Yeah, it's not close.
At least
close.
For me, yeah.
Yeah, you're further out west than I am. So I think it's about 60 miles from me,
mm-hmm.
60, 65 miles.
Plus you got that mountain
range. There's a mountain
range. Yeah, runs right through there. That may interfere with it a little.
Yeah, so I think with over the air, I think the antennas, in general, they're a range of, I think it's like 30 miles mm-hmm. is average. You can get more powerful ones. I think it's a little more like 50 or 75.
I was tempted to pick up an antenna and try it out on my PCHD TV 5500 card, but it's in my basement. I don't know. And I sit right at the base of South Mountain out there, so I don't know.
You would have to run cables.
Yeah, I don't know if I would get enough of a signal down there. So.
I guess if you're like in more of an urban setting and mm-hmm. you have good, you know, signal.
Yeah, right.
You'll be able to get them.
Right.
So I don't think I'm going to go the antenna route, but mm-hmm. I am going to pick up an HD home run at mm-hmm. some point. Now that device goes for about $150 mm-hmm. now.
And I think you can find it on eBay for cheaper too.
You know, I've been looking at some of the auctions mm-hmm. and the last few ones, the price was around $120.
Oh yeah.
$130. Mm-hmm. And for that much money, might as well just spend an extra $20.
Yeah, get the new one.
Get a new one with a warranty, you know?
Right, right.
Instead of getting one that's been used for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
If it was a little less, say like $100 or $90,
right.
I'd say yeah.
Now, am I mistaken, but was there a box that was similar to that that had like cable card capabilities in it? Does
not supported myth. Not, I think there was an HDI box.
Okay.
That had cable.
I thought
cable
I. Yeah, I didn't expect it to be in.
It's supported in, I think, Windows Media Center edition.
Okay.
And maybe some of the other commercial ones.
Yeah.
But there's nothing. You're not going to see cable card support.
No.
In myth ever.
No.
If you're holding out for that, man, you're going to be holding out a long
time. Long time, yeah.
Get over it.
No, I just thought that, I mean, it's a perfect application for it. That, you know, it's a box that sits out of the way. You just get one of their rentals, you know, their rental cards, drop it in, and then you control it through, you know, let the Myth backend control, you know, recording off of that. But, yeah, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, supposedly the HD Home Run is really easy as pie. Basically, it can do either dynamic IP or static IP. You plug it into your switch. There's like a little embedded web server where you can go in and, you know, kind of like how a router has, you know,
right.
You can go in and flip some settings and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You log into it. And then basically from Myth, you go into your Myth setup and it's one of the supported devices.
Yep.
You just turn it on, do a scan, you'll get your frequencies, resolve the cam or ATSC frequencies
right.
in your table for your channels. And you're good to go.
That's great.
It's I don't think it's an encoder. I think it just takes the signal, you know, which is MPEG-2 by default. I think most of them are doing them in.
Okay.
So, but supposedly the quality is very good and people are very happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's a dual tuner, you couldn't do simultaneous recording on both tuners.
Right.
But with 22, you will be able.
You'll
to
be able to. That'd be great.
So that kind of sounds like where I'm wanting to go. So. Yeah, I have my PVR-150.
Mm-hmm.
The analog signal is still there from the cable company.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I can get like all the stations below 100.
Right.
Which is quite a bit.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, so for like the stations that don't have any high def,
mm-hmm.
that's fine. You know, like some of the news networks.
Yeah, I offload all my kids' shows on Disney stuff like that, you know, yeah.
Well, some of those stations are in the digital tier. You have to have a box to record them.
Yeah. But on the analog ones, those ones I don't have an issue with.
Like Cartoon Network and mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah, the stuff that they want to watch, you know, it comes, it records every day, no issue.
Yeah. So who knows how long that feed's going to be going? So I'll see when I
start getting black screens up there, you know.
I'll be time to pull the cards
out. Yeah. Retire it, you know, maybe I'll put it in a frame somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sit it at my desk.
I don't know where Canada is as far as the digital. Changeover.
Yeah.
I know in Australia they still have like a mixed kind of setup.
Mm-hmm.
So all these other countries, you know, the European countries and Canada and Australia.
Right.
You know, they're slowly start migrating to the digital.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little disturbing though that you hear that the cable companies are using this as an excuse to lock stuff down. I also hear that they're starting to employ the digital flag again, broadcast flag.
That keeps coming back.
I've heard some stories that people who have some of the cable company DVRs
mm-hmm.
and even like a TiVo
mm-hmm.
that certain stations like HBO, Showtime for certain shows and movies, they won't be able to record it.
Really?
Yeah. because the broadcast flag is implemented. I know in Showtime, I don't know if it was last year, they had this miniseries about John Adams, who was one of the early presidents.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I believe they employed the broadcast flag on that.
Why?
You couldn't record it.
Why? But I just don't understand why they...
They think they're going to be making money off of DVD sales, I guess. Yeah. That's the only justification I can say they don't. Well, they're trying to do some kind of a licensing thing
for
countries. That's the only thing I could see. They don't want people throwing out torrents of the show.
Right.
And, you know, the people in other countries being able to download it before their local networks show it.
It's bullshit, if you ask me. It's all bullshit.
Yeah. Well, it's all about controlling money. Yep. Yeah. And speaking of TiVo, a really disturbing story I heard is last year TiVo sued EchoStar.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they won their case against EchoStar, which is Dish Network, which is one of the main satellite providers.
For a lot of money, too, right? $105 million, something like that?
$104 million. Yeah. But supposedly the DVR that the EchoStar was using was very reminiscent of TiVo. You know, some people said they just took the TiVo and just copied it verbatim.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but the case was they won the case against EchoStar, $104 million. This recently, a couple weeks ago, they also brought up lawsuits against Verizon, and AT&T. Now AT&T has a service called UVerse, and Verizon has Fios, which is basically they're providing cable TV, basically.
Yeah.
So you know the phone companies are now doing cable TV. And the cable companies are not doing phone.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about this, you know.
Why make a distinction anymore? Yeah, you know, they're just
dish providers.
They provide a, you know, let's just call them a utility. They provide utilities, you know.
Right. So they're suing those guys for their DVR type services. But what's a little odd about their lawsuit is with Verizon and AT&T, the devices are not their own.
Right.
Where the EchoStar device DVR was their own in-house developed box. I believe Fios, they use Motorola boxes, and I think the UVerse also uses Motorola, so they're using third-party boxes. So
now, is the software on them though third-party, or is that something that's
I don't know if it's in-house
in conjunction something?
I'm sure they got something customized on them.
Yeah, they would have to. They would have to.
But still, though, it's I don't know how that's going to hold. Now, TiVo's been in trouble for a while. They've been losing customers like a sieve since January of 2006.
Right.
Going down. It's pretty expensive, TiVo.
It is. Those HD boxes when they first came out were like $800.
They're a little more reasonable now. Yeah. I think they're more in the $200 to $300
range. I think they knocked some of the functionality out of them too. Like they lowered the hard drive capacity, and you know, because originally those Series 3 DVRs. They were gonna have like a 250 or 500 gig hard drive, and probably at the time 250 was
probably. If you're doing HD, man, I wouldn't throw anything less than 500.
No,
500 gig in there.
Yeah, but I think they knocked down the size of the hard drive, which I can't imagine is costing them all that much.
No, they got that stuff in mass quantity.
Yeah, tell me about it.
They buy them in lots of 100,000 and whatnot.
Right, but those boxes were very very expensive, you know, and I couldn't see anybody going out paying the monthly subscription fee on top. Because also at the time they had eliminated their lifetime.
Yeah, can't do that anymore.
No, I think you can. I think they brought it back because a lot of people were complaining about it.
How much is it? $500 or something?
I still have one from like 2000, and I think it only costs like $300 or $400.
The thing about that lifetime subscription, it's not transferable to a new device.
I think they allow one.
One transfer now?
One transfer.
Yeah, they got to do that because they're... They're going down the tubes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it seems that, you know, as part of their product life cycle, they're suing the shit out of the competition has been added.
Yeah.
As part of the product.
But now we're seeing, too, that they're going to start licensing out the software to other companies. You sent me that link that one day about RCN's going to switch over their DVR.
Year.
Yeah. So, which is going to be a pain in the ass again. You know what I mean? That was such a bad transition the last time. I won't get into it.
Yeah. I don't see them offering that less than $20. I think currently the DVR now is like $12, $13.
Yeah.
Very basic.
Yeah.
You know, very digital VCR, like not much to it.
But that's really what the lawsuit was recording to a hard drive, right? You know, they instead of recording to something like a video cassette tape, you know, that's...
I mean, video cassette tape technology, commercial VCRs
have been around
since 1965.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a long time ago already. We're talking 40 plus years.
Yep.
So, nothing innovative there. The only thing that I could see that TiVo innovated in when they were one of the first was, you know, how TiVo would, you know, would learn what you like to watch and suggest stuff to you.
I shut that off though.
That's not
that big
of a deal anymore.
I think it's more that it could you didn't have to schedule based upon time anymore, time and channel. You could set up subscriptions.
Season subscriptions.
Yeah, so that I could, you know, put in a show and it would allow me to, just like we do now with Myth, I could record everything, record only new episodes, record only the, you know, it would automatically switch channels or times if it happened to jump around for some reason. You know, it didn't tie you to, you know, 8 p.m. on a Tuesday night.
Right, so,
you know?
So yeah. If the show was moved from 8 p.m. till 10 p.m.
Right.
For 1 week, it'll
right.
pick it up.
Yep, it would pick it up.
Yeah. Another side story is one really annoying thing that I've noticed, with, especially with the network stations,
mm-hmm.
is that they'll make the show an extra 2-3 minutes.
Oh, it's so stupid.
And they do that to try to screw the people up who record the stuff.
Yeah. That's why we got multiple recorder, you know, multiple capture cards,
yeah.
And you can specify, hey, if you know, give this one an extra 5 minutes, or, or start it a little like 3 minutes early or something like that. Yeah,
that seems to be the default. Yeah. They'll make everything go an extra 5 minutes mm-hmm. or 3 minutes or whatever.
Although if nothing seems to be conflicting for me for that night, it usually doesn't have a problem. It'll go from 9 to 9:10 or 9 to 10:10, and then from, you know, 10:15 to 11 o'clock if it needs to. You know, I mean, on that one channel. So I haven't had a whole lot of headaches from it, but it's still, you know, you might look and say, oh, why isn't this recording this week? And it's because all the tuners are fused up, and this one is extended by, I mean, 15 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. So
yeah, the whole thing with TiVo is, you know, you got to pay a monthly subscription.
Yeah.
It gets really expensive.
Oh, it does.
If you're already paying so much for your cable or satellite bill.
It'd be different if that monthly subscription was just a couple bucks, you know, and, you know, 15 it's, bucks or
yeah.
12 bucks a month.
It's a lot of money.
It ends up being a lot of month. Yeah. You think about the lifetime you have that thing. So let's say it lasts you 4 years, you know, 12 months, 4 years. I mean, that's going to add up. It's well more than what the device costs at that point. So, yeah, I mean,
you're talking like $135 a year on just the subscription alone.
Right.
For the Schedules of Direct subscription, we're paying 20 bucks.
20 bucks a year.
As opposed to $135 a year. You know, if you're you know, rich, it's no big deal to you. But you know,
right.
I don't know about if they realize it, but times are tough right now. People losing jobs and whatnot.
Exactly.
I don't think they have, you know, discretionary income to piss away. You know.
No, and that could be the cause. That could be the cause of their you know, loss of customers for the last, you know, 3 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, it's only exasperated now that, you know, mm-hmm. we're in like a recession.
Yep.
It's kind of sad in a way.
Yeah.
You know that, you know. You see it more and often, at least here in the States. And here in the U.S., we got software patents.
Mm-hmm.
And companies, you know, they'll go after other companies just for the sake of you know, going after them. Sometimes you'll have companies that are basically patent trolls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're only businesses. They don't actually produce anything.
Right.
All they do is they go file patents or buy them, you know, file them in the patent office. And then, you know, when someone has something that remotely sounds like it,
they
sue them.
They sue them, yep.
It's pretty sad. You know, patent reform really should be an issue in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Not just software patents, but just patents in general,
yep.
You know, the whole patent system was put in place to give protection to people who come up with innovative ideas so that they can develop it further without the fear of their idea being stolen.
Right.
Okay, but nowadays, you know, the stuff, you know, a lot of the ideas, it's all commoditized.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's doing similar things, you know. It's not that, you know, unique anymore.
Right.
So by having a patent in place, you're basically putting a roadblock in place for innovation.
Yep.
You know, it's basically doing the opposite of what it was originally intended to do.
Go open source.
Absolutely. We really need to get rid of patents. I know, like, some of the U.S. companies have tried to push the EU to push software patents, and happily, the Europeans have rejected that. So kudos to those guys for standing up to those asshole content providers.
Right.
And, you know, pushing their agenda on other governments around the world. I don't like to get political, but it's nonsense.
Yeah.
It really is nonsense. Yeah. You know, you're a programmer, I'm a programmer.
Mm.
If you get a room full of 20 programmers and you describe a problem to them,
mm-hmm.
okay, and they're all coding in the same language, mm-hmm. or even other languages, different languages, and then you tell them to go to town and you come back the next day, you'll see stuff that's very similar.
Exactly.
You know, a developer is taught to program in a certain way, to use certain procedures and ways of doing things.
Sure.
You're going to see stuff that's similar.
Yep.
You know, it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, software patents, they suck.
Yep.
get rid of them. So going forward, you know, the new version of Myth is coming out at the end of the month. It sounds like Mythbuntu is going to be one of the first ones to have it in there.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything from the other ones yet. If they're starting to include it yet or not,
they might well be.
Yeah,
they're pretty reasonable to put that stuff through.
Right.
So I wouldn't give them much to get it turned around. Within a couple months, I'm sure they'll all be in there.
Yep.
They'll be coming out with releases that'll have all that stuff included.
Right.
One of the cool things about the PVR 1212, well, it wasn't implemented, was that the PVR 1212 box comes with a remote, an IR receiver, and it also has a built-in blaster.
Mm-hmm.
But in Linux, it wasn't implemented. Jared Wilson, who I know, and you know, I've talked to him on Tech Show, he's the guy who wrote the original Fedora Myth
Auto. Right.
Okay, and now he's one of the main developers of Mythdora.
Right.
And I believe he works for Red Hat also.
I think so. I think I remember seeing that on his blog a while back.
Well, anyway, he actually got the FireWire, not the FireWire, the IR blaster receiver working.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So he's got it working, literally like a couple days ago, beginning of the week, I think he had it working.
Right.
And so it'll just a matter of time for that stuff to get pushed through.
Right.
So it's another nice option. So you
might that'll be great. Yeah.
You might not have to buy a blaster. You'll have it, you know, on the box.
Exactly.
Now you do your channel changing via FireWire.
Right.
So the option is you could do a blaster to change your box, your set-top box, or you can do FireWire if you have a box with the FireWire port enabled.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to try that with this box. I want to see how it is.
Right.
Curious to see how reliable it is. I know with the IR blaster, the whole thing is like you have to like play around with a little emitter and get it in the right
spot. Yeah,
and then it's got like a little sticky tab, and you stick it to the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have two little kids. You know, it's not out of the realm of impossibility where one of them, you know, my 2-year-old might open the door and just yank the thing off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it'll pick up dust and carpet lint, and it won't stick anymore.
You can hot glue it to it.
Yeah.
I've seen people do that. I've seen professional installers come in, and they actually put a little bead right there, and they just put the lead right over top of it, and they just run the wire, you know, use like electrical tape and tape it to the bottom of it and run it through behind it. Yeah.
The FireWire, I haven't had experience with, but you have, and you say it's pretty reliable.
Well, everything comes over the FireWire. The signal comes over, you know, the raw feed comes over.
Right, so you can record.
Yeah. But it's a two-way street there. It sends the channel changing script out, and then it, once it changes the channel, it locks on and it then pulls down the raw feed.
Right. See, so. I would only be interested in the channel changing.
Well, there is. There's a script out there. I believe it's even in the forums.
It is, yeah.
That you can use so that you can just do the FireWire just for that, which you'll need to. You'll need to do something for that, you know, for using the 1212 box as an in-between the boxes. So.
Yeah. Yeah, either that
FireWire or the blaster. Yeah.
I think I'm going to try FireWire. I'm going to give that a go. I haven't done it yet, so I want to try it. So, no.
Yeah, pick up a wire now because, I mean, FireWire is pretty much dead. So
Get a card.
Yeah.
My mother, a lot of the motherboards have it on there by default still. So.
Yeah.
And you can get a cable for, you know, 6-foot cable or 3-foot cable.
Mm-hmm.
You
know. I don't know why it's dead. It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. So
the older video cameras, like the camera that I have, that little Canon 060, it's FireWire.
Yeah, mine does.
When I want to. You know, dump it onto the computer. That's what I use, the FireWire. It's a fast transport.
The USB 3.0 is right around the corner, too, and I believe it's already in the kernel. Yeah,
they're also talking about the wireless USB, too.
Oh, that'd be great. What's it called? I can't think of it off the top of my head.
USB 3.
USB 3 is wireless?
I think it supports it, I think.
There was something else for it. There was something else. Yeah. WiMAX or something like that it was.
No, WiMAX is different.
That's different?
Yeah.
Something else was called was for wireless USB.
USB 3 is like it's faster and it supports wireless.
It's like two or three or four times faster, I think it is, or something.
Yeah, it's like exponential speed. In fact, it's already supported in Linux. It's the first OS to have it.
Yep.
I sent an email to the girl who works at Intel who did that. I tried to get her on. She said she was very shy. She didn't want to come on for an interview. She wrote an article. She was involved in the Portland amateur rocketry group.
Oh,
and I think I saw that.
Yeah,
she actually wrote it.
Oh, did she? Oh, okay.
That same girl, woman, you know, she implemented USB in Linux for the first time. She wrote the driver and
everything. Right.
So
maybe
I can talk her into coming on.
Yeah,
on the shows again. Be nice to talk about it. So what's coming up in the next few weeks?
OLF's coming up.
Oh, yeah. OLF's going to be...
Can't wait. It's going to be awesome. My first time out there. You've been out there for a couple years. So.
3 years already. Yeah. It's a great show. Mm. It's been growing every year. Yep. Last year, they had about 1,200 people.
Yeah.
And they had a poll, you know, people you know, what was the first year you went to OLF? And a good 30% of the people who participated said this is going to be the first year.
Right.
So this may be the biggest year yet.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's a free show. Mm-hmm. They do have a pay if you want to support mm-hmm. the conference, but it's completely optional.
Right.
You can just walk in off the street. If you did walk in off the street, people, please go to the front desk and register so they have an idea of how many people are actually there.
Right.
So that they can plan the next year's conference accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if 2,000 people show up and they only see, you know, 1,200 people showing up,
mm-hmm.
they'll only have a venue that'll hold 1,200 people.
Right.
And it will be packed like sardines next year.
Right, yeah.
And plus, if there's more people, you know, OLF is like a one-day show.
Yeah.
They do have some Friday stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like Saturday is the main day, but they do have some Friday stuff this year. They have like a classes for like LPI certification now, like mm-hmm. cram sessions for that. We're going to be doing a podcast or roundtable on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I think Klaatu is also doing a Blender. I don't know.
Oh, is he?
For a presentation.
Yeah.
I know he's really into the mm-hmm. UV stuff, and he was a video editor by profession.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, his background. He came from doing video editing on Mac.
Okay.
And he actually worked for some of these studios doing video editing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he's taught on that, and he got away from the Apple, so.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, I'm glad there's people who are on Apple, and they see the crap that's involved with Apple. I know. If you go to these conferences, you'll see one or two idiots with you know, like, they had all their Mac stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
we can rant on about Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep a bag of tomatoes with me and start pelting them with them. Yeah.
I'll get some eggs and let them rot for a couple weeks.
There we
weeks.
Go. We got a good, 8 or 9 hour trip out there.
Yeah. I'll put a couple cases of eggs in the garage.
Yep.
Just let them sit there.
Yep.
Let them ferment for a few days.
There we go. I'll deal with that for
we'll
8 hours.
We'll be ready for yeah. them. Those guys who showed up with the Apple t-shirts, we're going to be ready for you. We kid.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so for anybody who's going to OLF, I did register a Myth TV BOF. So if you guys are interested in getting together in a BOF, basically a BOF is an acronym for Bird of a Feather.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it is just you get a bunch of people in the room, you start talking about a specific topic.
Right.
I don't plan on bringing any of my systems over there to do any presentations. I'm not doing a keynote talk or anything.
Mm-hmm.
If I was doing a presentation during one of the regular tracks, then I might be inclined to do that. They've done that a couple of years ago, I think.
Right.
And that was actually very popular. It was well attended. It was one of the most well attended talks that they had that year. I don't plan on doing that, and it's going to be very casual. We'll just sit down. If guys have like issues, questions, you just want to talk about it,
yep,
you know, share experiences, it'll be cool. We'll sit down, we'll talk and do all this stuff. I'm also going to try to do an Android one too. I have a G1 phone, and I've really got into the Android stuff lately. It's fun, so we'll do a little bit of that. Come over to the tech show table. We have a table there every year. I'm bringing my laptop. I'm going to bring in the broadband modem. We will be streaming during most of the day on Saturday. Mm-hmm. On Friday, the only thing I plan on streaming is the podcaster little, you know, get together that we're going to do, the roundtable. I think that's going to be at 5 p.m. Eastern on Friday the 25th. And then Saturday will be on most of the day, probably from like 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Right.
Through most of the day till like 3 or 4 o'clock. And we'll have people on. I'll grab some guests. We'll come over. I'll have people talking, you know. It'll be fun. It'll be interesting. It'll be a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And the pre-show, the pre-party the night before is always a blast, and the post-party is a fun time too.
I'm looking forward to it.
So if you guys are going to ELF, please come over to the table. Come say hello to me. I'm sure Dan here will be floating around. He'll be in the neighborhood. I'll point him out to anybody who asks who he is so they can go give him noogies. So,
careful, I got a bald head.
and you got a black belt in the keto too, right?
Yeah, right.
All right, well, we're about the hour mark now. We're going to wrap things up. Everybody, thanks for being patient with us getting the shows out. You know, we said we wanted to do it every 2 weeks, more like every 3 weeks.
I might as well update the website then to say.
Nah, we'll keep it every 2 weeks. We're going to try to do one more show before we go to OLF,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
And then, I don't know, maybe if we do the BOF, and maybe we'll record that and post that on the feed, make it an optional thing if people want to hear that. I hear that they're going to be recording the sessions this year. Like previous years, they've tried to record it and had mixed success, but I hear that they're going to try to make an effort to record it. And at the very least, all the stuff that I do, during the stream, the live stream, I will record, and that stuff will get added to the tech show stream.
Okay.
I might even, last year I edited all that stuff into regular episodes. I think we had like 2 or 3 episodes worth of material, extra, like hour episodes.
Right.
So it's good. It'll be good. You know, great show, good conference, lots of cool people, you know, different subjects. They're celebrating 40 years of Unix, so, you know, there'll be some old beards hanging around.
Yep.
And some young kids, too, so it'll be a good mix.
40 years of Unix and the internet, huh?
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a long time. So, you know, Columbus, Ohio, September 25th and 26th, 26th, the main day, Saturday. We'll see you there. So, everybody, take care. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
See ya. We'll be right back.
with the distant dawn of light upon my face. She takes my hand and leads me to a place where the rainbow balm is strong inside my heart, assuring me it's been there from the start. Stop the race.
make love, or you can make love.